Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the SeQuent Scientific Limited Q4 FY22 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Abhishek Singhal. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
A very good morning, and thank you for joining us today for SeQuent Scientific's earnings conference call for the fourth quarter and full year ended financial year 2022. Today we have with us Mr. Rajaram, SeQuent's Managing Director, Sharat, Joint Managing Director, and Tushar, CFO, to share the highlights of the business and financials for the quarter. I hope you've gone through our results release and the quarterly investor presentation, which have been uploaded on our website as well as the stock exchange website. The transcript of this call will be available in a week's time on the company's website. Please note that today's discussion may be forward-looking in nature and must be viewed in relation to the risks pertaining to our business. After the end of this call, in case if you have any further questions, please feel free to reach out to the investor relation team. I now hand over the call to Mr. Rajaram to make the opening comments.
Good morning, everyone, and a very warm welcome to our quarter four and full year 2022 earnings call. Joining me on this call is Mr. Tushar Mistry, our CFO, and Sharat Narasapu, the Joint Managing Director. I'm really happy to address this forum for the first time in my capacity as the CEO and Managing Director. 6 weeks into this role, I am really excited to be part of the journey at SeQuent, and I'm really looking forward to building this company with the team here as a major global global animal health company. First of all, I would like to start off by expressing my gratitude to my predecessor, Mr. Manish Gupta, the former Managing Director and CEO, who has led and grown this company into such a fine institution. We are today the largest animal health company from India, and we are currently amongst the top 20 animal health companies in the world, and that's something to be very proud about. We have a presence across 100 countries. About two-thirds of our revenue comes from regulated markets. Our strategic capabilities include a formulations business, which has a front-end presence in key animal health markets of Europe, Brazil, Turkey. At the same time, we are the only company in India to have established a USFDA-approved greenfield veterinary API facility. This is a very unique combination that we have. The major credit, of course, I must say, for the company's significant achievement goes to our more than 1,900 talented colleagues operating across multiple geographies who have been instrumental in this phenomenal journey of the company. As outlined, throughout this year, the company is now entering its next phase of growth, which we have headlined under SeQuent 2.0. Under the SeQuent 2.0 strategy, we envision a bigger, bolder, and a more ambitious organization that is focused on growing penetration in existing markets, as well as expanding our scale in newer high-growth geographies. Coming to recent times, last year was certainly filled with multiple challenges. We have emerged stronger as an organization, and we are progressing well on our strategic plans. No doubt there are uncertainties relating to geopolitical issues in Europe. There have been sporadic COVID lockdowns. Inflation is a worry, and the ongoing disruptions in supply chain continue. Nevertheless, we are very confident of the underlying strength and the performance of our business. If I look at some of the numbers that we have released, our API business generated nearly 127 crores in revenue last quarter, and this is the highest revenue that we have registered in any quarter in the history of our operations. In this fiscal, in fact, the API business has now clocked over 430 crores in revenue, and we have begun to successfully complete our customer EHS audits. There have been no critical observations in these audits. Our facilities, which are there in Mahad, have received the relevant ISO certifications for EHS. We have also successfully commercialized three new APIs. We have submitted one DMF filing, And if you look at at an aggregate level, our progress report depicts about 24 U.S. VMF filings and 11 CEP approvals. Our other investment, which is in Germany, the U.S. FDA upgrade has resumed after a stop which had happened in recent times because of COVID, and that's progressing well. And if you come to our formulations business, it continues to build on the momentum that it has started on last year, and we see some good growth coming in that area as well. I'm glad to report that the business has delivered healthy growth in line with the strategy which was outlined last year. And if you look at it at a constant currency basis, the formulations business grew 13.5% and has registered 980 crores in terms of revenue. This top line has been boosted by excellent performance in our LATAM business, anchored in Brazil, which grew by 42.1%, and we've got a much higher contribution from the India formulations business, where we've crossed the milestone of 100 crores in revenue, clocking 30.5% in growth. As far as Turkey is concerned, despite difficult macro environment conditions, our plan continues to remain on track, and we do see the strategic advantage ahead, both as a home market for Turkey as well as a beachhead for exports from Turkey. And this effort on a constant currency basis, we are seeing that we have registered a revenue growth in Turkey of 17.6%. And therefore, really, if you put all the operations of Sequent together, we have crossed 1,400 crores with the revenue crossing 7.2% last year. As we progress further, a key component of our Sequent 2.0 strategy is really to consolidate our acquisitions, which we have, and we achieved another milestone there by picking up 100% stake in Nuri, which is now a fully owned subsidiary in Brazil. And this acquisition will enable us to scale up as Nuri provides a portfolio of 23 commercialized and also a pipeline of 17 products for pet and swine segments. So we are optimistic about the growth prospects because Brazil is one of the fastest growing animal health markets, especially in the companion animal segment. Now, as we build upon the Sequent 2.0 strategy, we are now also significantly enhancing our capabilities, be it in R&D, in key account management, and related areas. And in this journey, we are very fortunate to have the help of global experts in animal health. And I'm really, really excited about the potential of this company and the opportunity to take it to the next level. So at this stage, I will invite Tushar, our CFO, to share his comments on the financials. Over to you, Tushar.
Thanks, Raja, and good morning to everyone. Moving on from the official updates, coming to our financial results. In year-on-year terms for the quarter, our revenues are at 3.8 billion, which is up by 11.7% in constant currency terms, boosted by recovery in API business, which delivered its highest ever quarter. EBITDA pre-ESOP is at 386 million with a margin of 10.1%. While margins continued to be affected by macro factors with continuing impact on input and logistic costs, current quarter also saw cost increases in utilities across geographies. There have been also few one-off cost impact, which include write-off of validation batches of 21 million, one-time higher power charges in Germany of 7 million, and one-time settlement costs of 19 million. We continue to monitor the cost situation very closely and implementing cost control measures across geographies. ESOP costs across quarters haven't been stable on account of changes in management. However, we expect this to stabilize in the range of approximately 85 to 95 million per quarter based on fresh grants to new employees. Current quarter also saw consolidation of our Brazil business and the follow-on acquisition in Brazil. Current quarter results account for full consideration of Brazil business and full consolidation of Brazil business and 1 month operation of Nuri, the recently acquired business. Coming to the annual numbers, our revenue is up by 7.2% in constant currency terms at 14.1 billion. Growth was largely driven globally by formulation business in Brazil and India. EBITDA pre-ESOP is at $1.4 billion with a margin of 10.1%. Current year saw significant volatility in Turkish lira, which moved from 8.33 to a USD in March 21 to 14.65 to a USD in March 22. While this volatility has impacted reduction in net worth by about $797 million, we continue to hold a very strong leadership position in the market, which reflects in our constant currency growth in our Turkish operations. We believe that this adverse conditions can be an advantage due to our local manufacturing capabilities, as the importers tend to lose heavily on account of currency. Our net debt increased by $913 million, primarily due to the debt raised to fund Nuri acquisition and also for consolidation of minority stake in Brazil. The acquisition also resulted in increase in intangible assets to the tune of about $228 million. During the quarter, working capital went up as we built inventories in some geographies which were hit by volatility in currencies. We believe we are well invested in working capital to take care of any future volatility in currencies and prices, and expect to remain at similar levels in quarters to come. We continue to invest significantly in CapEx program to accelerate our growth. In FY22, we incurred CapEx spends of $313 million, and in FY23, we will continue with our expansion plans in Vizag and Germany. That concludes my opening remarks on financials, and I would request the moderator to open the floor for Q&A. Thank you.
Nikisha, can we take up Q&A, please?
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Praful Kumar from Diamond Asia. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity and congratulations for the role. Sir, broadly in terms of, say, you know, 1 to 3 year period, what is the strategic plan in terms of geographical growth? What are you looking at in terms of growth, margins, gross margins from here, and how do you build this?
So look, thank you for the question. I think we have outlined in recent times a sequence 2.0 strategy, I think, and there are two components to it. On the API side, we are clearly looking at, you know, strengthening our presence in regulated markets, and one of which is, of course, the entry into the U.S. Market, and that's why we are one of the few companies which has a US FDA plant in Vizag, and that's one area which, of course, we'll be strengthening from the API side, but the focus is going to be on regulated markets. As far as the formulation business concerned, we are strengthening our current presence, so we have a location in LATAM, which is there in Europe, and, of course, in Turkey and India, and these markets would continue to remain our focus. These are also the large markets for animal health. On the other question which you asked about what's our, you know, sense on how in 1 to 3 years are we going to do on some of the financials, I think we've generally been giving an indication that, you know, we would be growing, you know, in early teens as far as the top line is concerned, and we would be expanding our margins. But that's something that, you know, has to play out given the circumstances that are there at a macro level right now in the country. But definitely in the long term, the intention is to expand our margins as well as, you know, get on to double-digit growth consistently.
Understood. And sir, last question would be on the India piece. How do you look at it over the next 1 to 3 years? Because that's done really well. What's the outlook on the India business?
So the India formulation business that we have is a combination of two operations. There are products which we make ourselves, and there are those that we distribute for one of the large companies. Definitely, you know, India is a growing market, and it remains one of our top priorities on the formulation side. So we do see a, you know, a double-digit kind of a growth which should remain in India in the near term.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Participants who wishes to ask a question may press star and one now. The next question is from the line of Aman Agarwal, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello. Good morning and thank you for the opportunity. Am I audible?
Yes, sir, you are. Please
yeah.
go ahead.
So, sir, I understand that the rise in debt is due to acquisitions, but going forward, what level of debt to equity companies targeting to maintain?
We are currently at about 0.3 to 0.4 kind of debt to equity, net debt to equity. We don't expect any significant rise from this level, is what we expect, because whatever we had to do, we have already done in FY22. We don't expect any significant rise from this levels going forward.
Okay, understood. The next question is on the goodwill and the you know the intangibles. Can you please tell something about the amortization schedule for the increased goodwill on the balance sheet?
Yeah, so goodwill is subject to impairment. We don't do amortization of goodwill. Goodwill is tested for impairment every year, which has been carried out in the current year, and there has been no impairment on any of our investments so far. We are all in all our geographies. We have strong positions, and we are operating from a strong base. So that's why there has been no reason for any impairment in any of our investments so far.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Taran Agarwal from Old Bridge Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. A couple of questions from my side. You know, in Sequent 2.0, there is a thrust on being a value leader in animal health. If you could expand on it in terms of where you're trying to target yourself, that's number one. Number two, if you could give us a sense on how big are your addressable opportunities in Europe and Brazil. And pardon my ignorance, I mean, does this business work on a, you know, route of administration or a particular therapeutic segment? And if so, how are you, you know, planning to get to that? These two questions from my side.
Thank you. So let me answer the first question on how we are looking to become a value leader. Clearly, there are, you know, the entire generic space is a continuum where you move from, you know, unbranded generics to moving towards more specialty generics. And that the journey we are on really is to move to more specialty generics. You know? And that's both a question of the therapies that we are in, indications that we supply for, as well as the formats in which we deliver those. And therefore, we clearly are building a position in injectables, which is one area axis on which you look at, you know, value leadership. And the second, of course, is looking at those molecules which are available for higher value addition and not, you know, where you're one or two players who are likely to be available. So it's really moving up the generic chain from currently, you know, the kind of sort of broad-based generics we have to the higher value-added specialty generic which are there, both in terms of the choices we make in R&D as well as the kind of product formats we deliver it in. And then, of course, there is the third angle, which is really on value addition that you can make in the area of application of those generics for use. So that's really the three pieces which we are working on. Towards that, we are obviously also working with the top animal healthcare companies who are there at the leading edge of innovation and giving us an opportunity to at some point of time becoming partners with them. The second area, which question which you asked is in terms of how the, you know, market is divided. At this point of time, it seems to be reasonably basic, unlike the human pharma market. It's still about, you know, companion animals and about cattle. and the feed animals. That's at one axis. That's the, you know, there is more, I would say, sharper segmentation coming as far as the pet animal or the companion animal segment is concerned. And that is where you are having, you know, some degree of differentiation coming in terms of where it is administered by the veterinarians, whether it is, and the diseases which are used. But on the other side, in terms of the feedstock and the cattle usage, it is still largely, you know, through large farms and holdings and through organized, you know, whether it is government or large farm application of these medicines. So that's pretty much the way in which the delivery happens.
Got it. How big are these markets and how big are your current addressable opportunities in terms of pipelines or the current portfolio of products that you have, specifically in Europe and Brazil?
So again, we continue at this point of time, we are not a large player in companion animals, you know, which is a large part of the market. If you leave that piece out, we are pretty much there in the rest, which is about close to 60% of the market, which is the area of cattle as well as other, you know, feed and food animals. Now, within that, I think, there is less data available, but I think you can reasonably assume that if you look at the top markets after U.S., the next one would be West Europe, roughly around the same size of about 10-odd billion. And then you have, you know, Brazil and Turkey and these kind of markets being in size, which are more likely to be about 2 to 3 billion odd kind of numbers. But, you know, there are no sort of very fixed data available on it. But that's broadly the stack rank in which it is there.
Got it. And if I may, just one more question. How's the distribution for these products in the geographies that you're operating for formulations?
Two routes we have. In some cases, we have, of course, our own companies, which both manufacture and distribute, which are in Spain, in Brazil, in Turkey. These are places where we have, companies which are manufacturing units. In some other markets, we purely have, some sales force in some markets, and in some cases we work with distributors. So it's a mix of these. Three sort of, I would say, which is markets where we both produce and sell, and in the others we are more distributor.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aditya Khemka from InCred Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. So if I wanted to check with you, you know, given the cost inflation in the raw material, excipients, solvents, etc., how is our pricing power in various markets, at least the larger ones that we operate in? Are we able to pass on the inflation in raw material to consumers by means of higher prices, or are we partly absorbing, partly passing on, or are we not able to pass on? If you could just give us some sense there.
And firstly, of course, any passing on price in a largely a B2B business is a delayed passing on, right? So you incur your costs much earlier, and then you are able to get into conversations on passing on much later. So that's, I think, the first thing to remember from a sequencing of when we will be able to realize. And then comes the question of, how much of it you're able to get. I would say that we are beginning to see this more in our formulations businesses, where we are able to pass on some price increases. Not in entirety at this point of time. Again, it has to be, step by step you have to take, because at the other end, we don't want to lose market share in any place. I think that's one thing we are obsessed about, is that we want growth and we want market share. And in the short term, if it means that to sustain that, we need to be, a little stiff with our margins, we will be prepared to do that. But in this business, which is a B2B business, we should not take any chances on that. So we are very committed to holding market share. Then comes into how do we pass on these price increases. Certainly in our API business, where we have about 60-70% of our businesses either with long-term contracts or with in regulated markets. It's a function of, you know, when the contracts sort of expire and then we renegotiate gradually give it on. There is a some appetite now for taking price increases at the customer end, but I don't think the entire increase can be passed on. It is still to be something which we will share between the two gradually.
Right. And is this true only for the formulation business or also for the API business, or is the API business actually worse because it's completely B2B?
Yeah, so I think even the API business, as I just said, it is two kinds of businesses we have. Those which are, you know, with long-term contracts, with, you know, regular partners, and where, you know, one, as the contracts sort of end, we renegotiate the prices and our partners are willing to take some degree of price increase. And that's about 60-70% of our business. The other part of it is what you may call traditionally a spot business. And in that, it tends to be, you know, much more, I would say, price sensitive. And there we have to be a bit careful about, you know, whether we may not always be able to book. And that, again, depends on, you know, which molecule you're competing on and what's the grade of the product that you are in right now. But we see some, you know, clear indications that people are willing to take up prices at the API customer end, but it is much more slower and gradual. But as I said right in the beginning, our obsession is for making sure we don't lose our customers.
Right. And just help me understand this in a little more nuanced manner. veterinary products across the world are branded generics, right? That's what we sell. So if our brand is popular with the customer and we increase the price and you're afraid of losing market share, so despite being a branded product, does the customer generally switch between brands if the price of one product is somewhat higher than the other brand, or is there a stickiness to the brand which the consumer is, you know, buying from us?
I guess on this one, and I think we know some degree of it, is at the end of the day, the very fact that it's a generic, branded generic, means there's an alternative available even if it is the branded. And it depends what's the degree of premium your brand is able to command and how much stickiness is there. So it's a bit of a trade-off around what's the pricing you can get and what's the market share you can retain. Now, a lot of branded generics business in the animal health area is through very, very large distributors. Right, and these are sort of negotiating chains which are there, and they are at the other end where the prescriptions happen through veterinarians as well as through other large, you know, farm institutions, etc. They have to sustain their business, so they do make a preference for a branded generic, which is you know, at a more competitive price for their end user, because they also have to sustain that. So it's not that just because you're branded, you can. And again, as I said in the beginning, we are more a generic player than we are a branded generic player, and we are in the journey of moving up towards becoming a branded generic player. But at this stage, we are largely a generic player. We have, of course, the origin of the aloe vera brand name, which sustains us. But otherwise, we're still largely a generic player.
So when you say that you are still largely a generic player, what percentage of your top line would you classify as generic and what percentage of your top line would you classify as branded generic?
Give it exact this thing, because frankly in the animal health business, this line is too fine right now, unlike some of the other human pharma, etc.
I understand. And just help me understand the distributor dynamic as well. So generally distributors, you know, to whom you sell, they have a percentage on the MRP as their commission. That's what they make. So generally, they would be aligned to a higher price because their commission goes up with the percentage being fixed. Is that not the case, or why is the distributor not happy with the higher price as long as the veterinarian is willing to prescribe the brand?
Well, I think it's a bit too specific, but in general, you know, when you have a price pressure in any market, I don't think, you know, distributors just opt for the higher price brand, right? I think they also need to sustain their volume. And therefore, there are many other factors which play in the choice of that. So.
All right. I'll take this offline probably with you.
Yeah, I think it'd be good to have this discussion, and you know, it'll also give me some learning because you seem to know a lot about this business. So.
No, no, the other way around, I'm sure. And the second question I really had was about the capital.
Actually, it's not the second question, but we'll take it right now.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, sir, for that. Very kind. So my last question for you is, when I look at your capital allocation, so you said that, you know, there is not going to be any more increase in debt, and the goodwill is going to obviously amortize. Should we take that as that we will not probably do any acquisitions in the near term, at least for the next 2 or 3 years, and try to sort of optimize the utility of the assets that we already have? Or can we do more acquisitions as we move forward? And the time frame I'm looking at is 2 to 3 years.
Look, we are focused on growing our business in line with the strategy which we have. And wherever there is a good opportunity, we will certainly go for it. And, you know, given our company and the backing that we have, we are certainly not constrained for any kind of resources. So right now, of course, but however, whatever we do will be very disciplined. And what we are saying right now is that, you know, we are going to, in the current situation with the visibility we have, it's a very disciplined way of working. But we're not constrained to make any kind of, you know, inorganic move at all.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
The next question is from the line of Bharat Seth from Quest Investment Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. Sir, little more, I mean, question, micro-related. When we expect that Europe to start delivering injectable to European market, and currently what kind of a contribution it is giving to the turnover, and once the Europe market and once we get US FDA, so how will be the margin trajectory?
So I'll give you a broad idea about it. So one is, of course, as you know, we have a plant which we have in Germany, which was stopped in terms of functioning for a short while as far as our US FDA project was concerned because of COVID. Now we have resumed the necessary upgrade, and that, in our view, you know, in FY25 is when we should be in a position to you know, begin to commercialize some of the opportunities, the plans that we have. Having said that, we are much earlier as far as supplying from there to some of the European markets and emerging markets are concerned. So that we have already started, although on a smaller scale. But it's just that the U.S. operation is likely to be in FY25 for us. And right now the upgrade has started.
And what is the potential for this plant to deliver kind of when once we start this EBIT US approximately some kind of ballpark in top line as well as EBITDA term margin percentage term?
Just give me a minute. Let me just refer to, I'm just a bit new on this one, so I'll just refer to the notes. Hang on. Yeah.
Okay. Meanwhile, sir, on second question.
Yeah, go on. You know, we've come back to you with that question directly because I don't want to
now
get on the numbers.
Our Vizag plant, which is already US approved, so currently is there any contribution coming from the US side? And if not, what is the potential and where do we see by 25?
Yeah, you're here.
Yeah. The fact that it is US FDA approved plant, the supplies to US are already on, and it's not something new, but you know, the need for customers we have, it depends on their plan of launch, whether it's in which geography. So we are not constrained into what geography we have.
And so last question on, we had a when we launch, I mean, this Sequent 2, we had a vision of 25 crossing some kind of a revenue target of around 3,000 crore and EBITDA in very high teen 20 plus. So with this macro changing, is there any change in that vision?
Look, I don't think I want to get back to you right now on, you know, what exactly are those numbers. But I think what we have repeated just now is that the long-term plan remains what we set out to do. There could be, you know, rebasing depending on what the current macro situation is, but we definitely would like to deliver what we, you know, set out to do last year. Yeah, and for the rest of the things, maybe in the next call or something, I can get clearer about it. But there is no going back on our ambition.
With your permission, sir, last question for Tushar, I mean, on the financial side.
Go ahead. Yes, please. Yeah.
Tushar, for FY22, how much was the one-off and how much was the ESOP cost, and when do we expect that ESOP to end?
ESOP cost, let me first answer the ESOP cost. ESOP has been a bit volatile over last few quarters because of Manish leaving and also because of my reversals and all. But it should going forward, it should stabilize in the range of about 85 to 95 million per quarter. Again, because of the new grants that is happening, this cost is higher in FY23. Going forward, again, you will see this tapering down to half of it in the following years. So that's how we expect this ESOP cost to go. The one-offs would have been approximately for the current year in the range of between 100 to 150 million is what I expect in FY22.
And do we expect any further one-off, I mean, or some kind of estimation that we expect that can be?
No, not really. Okay. We don't expect that anymore.
Thank you. And so whenever we, next time also in next call, if you can share on the Europe plan. Thank you very much. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ayush Parekh from RS Capital Limited. Please go ahead.
Hello.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Ayush, but there is a disturbance from your line, sir.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Please go ahead.
Yeah. First of all, congratulations for the good set of numbers. I see that the contribution from regulated markets has gone up significantly to 71%. So what is the outlook for FY23 and coming years?
Look, we can't give you a number for that, but as we have repeated, you know, directionally for us, more presence from regulated markets is part of our strategy, both on the API side as well as on the, you know, formulation side. And our investments are in line with that.
Okay. And what impact does increased contribution from those markets have on our margins?
Again, cannot give you the exact number, but generally, regulated markets, because of the nature of the products that we supply, the nature of the customers, and the ability to pay, will always tend to have higher margins than the unregulated markets. But that's a general trend, but it's very customer-specific.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of S. Chatterjee from Asterisk Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity, sir. I have two questions. First one is, could you please provide some color on the input cost, raw material cost hikes? And is it easier to pass on the cost in regulated market compared to unregulated market?
So I think we referred to this earlier. The ability to pass on price, you know, is one, it's a delayed thing from the time you actually get the price. It depends on the kind of customer base you have. There are two kinds of sets of customers, those with whom you have, you know, more long-term contracts, and those who are more what you would call, you know, the spot sort of buys which happen in terms of the business. On the spot side, it tends to be more difficult because, you know, it's very price sensitive. There are lots of grades, lots of competitors. But on the more long-term contracts, because of the relationship you have as well as the value you are able to give to your customer, you are able to gradually, you know, pass on the costs sensibly. But it's a delayed delivery of that.
Sir, my question was regarding, is there any difference between regulated and unregulated market? That earlier answer to Mr. Khemka, I already listened.
So I don't think, you know, it's so much to do with the regulated, unregulated. It's got to do more with what kind of, you know, customer relationships you have and the nature of that customer engagement.
And so my last question is...
There's a presence in regulated markets and therefore it may appear to be because it is regulated, but it's more to do with the kind of customer.
Okay, sir. And my last question is, where do you see your paint and vaccine business in, say, next 4 years?
Sorry, which business?
Paint and vaccine business in next 3-4 years. How do you...
Clearly on the pet side, we realize that, you know, that is a fast-growing, which is a companion animal segment. And both on, you know, what we are delivering on the, developing on the API side with our partners, as well as on our formulation side, that's going to be a, you know, growth business. I think globally that business is growing somewhere in, you know, 5-6%, and in specific segments it may be better. So we are going to be there. But as I said, there are 4 markets that we are looking. We're looking at India, we're looking at Brazil, and we'll also be looking at some parts of Europe. But that's something that we will be developing, you know, at a rate which should be faster than our average of the company. On the vaccines piece, we have nothing really to report right now. We are, of course, in conversations with, you know, different manufacturers to see if there's an opportunity to, you know, introduce them in our country. But vaccine involves, you know, fairly long process of registration, etc. So there's nothing to report on it at this stage.
Okay, so thank you. My question has been answered. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prashant Kumar Hazariwala from Solidaire Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir.
Yeah, good morning. So my question is like earlier we used to do 5-6% kind of EBITDA, and then we have moved to 15% kind of EBITDA in FY21.
I'm sorry, you're not. Can I just stop you? You're not very clear. Just let me just realign. Could you say that again?
Just hold on.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yes.
Okay, is it clear now?
Yes, clearer.
Yes. So my question is like we. Around FY16-17, we used to do 5% kind of EBITDA or 6 months, right? And then gradually we moved to 16% kind of EBITDA in FY21. Now we again came back to 7.7 kind of EBITDA, right? So it's like a complete circle. We are back to zero kind of thing, like up 4-5 years. So how do we see this EBITDA trajectory going forward? Revenue is okay, like you said that they are like mid-teen, we will grow, but the main concern is the EBITDA. We are not getting on to that, right? So, how do you see EBITDA improvement going ahead?
I think the clear intent is to, you know, increase that as far as our EBITDA margins are concerned. And you know, our attempt is very clearly in our plans and strategy to keep increasing it, and we are trying to do that through a combination of the mix of products that we are selling, the investments we are making. But having said that, the recent times have also, you know, surprised everyone, and not just us, everyone in the industry through, you know, whether it is, you know, input-related issues, cost-related issues, supply issues. And we are making sure that it doesn't come in the way of our long-term growth story. Yeah, and therefore, while we are consistently looking at, you know, cost initiatives, you know, making sure that we are developing products and launching them faster. So all those initiatives are in place. So clearly expanding margins is our ambition. And that is something that we are very committed to.
So, like, after 1 year, like, that was a turmoil, no doubt about it, right? But how do we see, like, next year? Are we seeing the
upside of in margin, or we still we will be struggling to maintain this kind of margin?
So our intent is to increase and expand the margins. And that I'm saying irrespective, of how things pan out. But right now our intent is very clearly that we would expand margins as we have guided in the past of, 150 to 200 BPS. But the circumstances right now is something which is not, in our control. We're not able to predict that well. But should we have no unexpected surprises, that's the direction in which we will go every year. But it is also important to know from that we may be rebasing the year in terms of where we are starting from. So I think comparisons with, FY21, while we may eventually reach there, but I don't think it is the attempt is to, immediately, benchmark ourselves to FY21 because the circumstances are very different.
I'm just talking about the complete circle that we have started from 5 to 40 and then again back to 7. That is what happened.
I think that's a fair point. I am very confident that going ahead, unless we have any external macro surprises, we should, start in the expansion journey again.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Yogesh Tiwari from Arihant Capital Markets Limited. Please go ahead.
Good morning, sir. And thanks for taking my question. Just to check if I'm audible.
Yes, you are. Yeah.
Yeah. So just wanted to understand, earlier in the call, you told that the European market is about $10 billion. And if I look at our European numbers, like we make about 4 billion rupees. So just wanted to understand, is this European market, very much competitive and diversified, because the revenue share which we have out of the total market is quite small. So just wanted to understand the nature of this European market.
As I said earlier, that's just a ballpark estimate. It covers all segments. It covers cattle, it covers, poultry, swine, it covers pet and companion animals, it covers, other components of the industry like vaccines, etc., which we are not present in. So I think, it's just that it's a large market from a point of view of, what the opportunity could be depending on where you are present. And the fact is, yes, if you look at the total market at, 40 odd billion, we are 200 million. So, there are many players who are there in this industry, and I think we will slowly improve market share. I think the good news is that it's a large market, yeah, so we have a big headroom. That's what, keeps us bullish about these markets.
Thought or a question. It's like we are already present in the Europe market, and there's a lot of room for improvement over there to get market. Then why are we actually looking at building the US market or entering the US market? Because that will also have a factor cost and everything. Then we already have everything set up in Europe and a lot of opportunities there. So is there any advantage in US or something different from the Europe business model?
So I think there are a couple of nuances. Europe is multiple countries, and we should not look at it. And each of them has their own, regulations. Your competitive position is different in each of these markets. So while we have a starting point in Europe because of our presence in Spain, we certainly are not present in many of the large markets which are there in Europe, whether you take UK, whether you take Germany. And all of these markets are market Italy. These are markets where we are seeing an opportunity to grow, either through distribution or through our own products. So that is, one part of what we want to do. As far as the US is concerned, it is the other large market where we don't have a presence on the formulation side. And that we believe is a very, very long-term specialty generic market which we can develop. And that is why that's another operation being supported by a manufacturing facility getting created in this. So there are two different components of our strategy. It's not a trade-off of one versus the other. In the case of Europe, we already acquired an existing facility and an operation, and we are sort of entering, just expanding in that market. In the case of U.S., it's about developing a very, very specific capability there.
Sure, sir. Thanks for answering.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be taking the last two questions from now. The next question, which is from the line of Mahek Talati from Yellow Jersey Investment Advisors. Please go ahead.
Good morning and thank you for the opportunity. So my first question is regarding the albendazole API. As it is one of our major API, are we seeing an increased demand for the same?
Okay, what's your second question?
And my second question is regarding the API supply contract which we have signed. When are we expecting the revenue generation for the same?
So I'll come to the second question. I think we've said in the earlier investor calls that, we are expecting towards the back end of FY23 and the early part of 24. But the real realization maximization is more in FY24 is what we have indicated. And I think that's what we are on plan to right now deliver. So that's the second part of your question. The first part of your question is, has the albendazole demand revived? Certainly, as we said before, what were the restrictions because of, lower pickups from WHO seems to be easing. And we are therefore seeing some pickup on that side where, it's also the grade that, we supply. And so that side is picking up. On the other side, it is still a competitive market, and it's going much, we're trying to get strong entries there. But on the WHO side, we're certainly seeing a pickup, which is happening, and that's the one which we had indicated earlier we were not able to supply.
So when we will see the pre-COVID kind of pickup from for the albendazole? Are we expecting any timeline for the same?
Can't sort of guess that. But I would imagine that, as the entire COVID situation sort of eases and everything returns to normalcy, if there is something called normalcy, then we should see it in another 12 months or so. We should see, that kind of a situation revert. But having said that, we are a high-quality, great manufacturer of albendazole, and we are therefore, for us, that's an opportunity which is coming irrespective of how the market is growing.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so, sorry, I think you have one more question? That was the last question, no?
Yes.
Okay, so thank you all for joining this call. And as I said in the beginning, Sequent is... now in a very, very exciting phase of its growth journey. And as a management team, we strongly believe that there's an opportunity to develop a very, very unique animal health company, which will become even larger and a significant player. So thank you all for your support. And, we look forward to meeting you at the next call.
Thank you. On behalf of Sequent Scientific Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.